Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada ki. Into that universal lotus flower, Lord Vishnu personally entered as the super soul. And when it was thus impregnated with all the modes of material nature, the personality of Vedic wisdom, whom we call the self-born, was generated. Purport. This lotus flower is the universal Virat form, or the gigantic form of the Lord in the material world. It becomes amalgamated in the personality of Godhead Vishnu in his abdomen at the time of dissolution. And it becomes manifest at the time of creation. This is due to Garbhodakshayi Vishnu, who enters into each of the universes. In this form is the sum total of all the fruitive activities of the living entities conditioned by material nature, and the first of them, namely Brahma, or the controller of the universe, is generated from this lotus flower. This first-born living being, unlike all the others, has no material father, and thus he is called self-born or Swayambhu. He goes to sleep with Narayan at the time of devastation, and when there is another creation, he is born in this way. From this description, we have the conception of three: the gross Virat form, the subtle Hiranyagarbha, and the material creative force, Brahma. Om Gyanati Mirandhasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurum Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Shri Mati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashyatya Deshatarine Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Panamami Hari Priye Namo Mahavadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gaura Tushe Namaha Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripasindubhya evacha Patitanam pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo namo namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. So thank you all for coming here today. The subject matter is creation, one of the most repeated subject matters of the Bhagavatam. It actually goes through many cantos, the first, the second, the third, the fifth canto. It's a lot of creation. And when I got this verse, I thought, time's up, Govinda. Now you gotta go into understanding the creation a little more delicately. Because I think I mentioned in a previous class, I've studied this in school, in childhood, in Gurukul. But it's just, you don't always quite get it. There is always another layer, and another layer, and another layer. And Krishna arranged this verse, I think, because this word, which is being used here, called Hiranyagarbha, this word we're going to be delving into a little bit. So I hope this class can be helpful for those who are also like me, trying to understand creation. Of the Bhagavatam, I've tried to simplify it. So we had a wonderful kirtan, which was a little longer, And I also feel a little short of time. But I was thinking to speak a little bit on the universal form, a little bit about Hiranyagarbha and also Lord Brahma, since this is the subject of the chapter. The chapter is called Manifestation of Brahma from Vishnu. And today's verse is exactly that verse, when Brahma appears. So Brahma is the subject also of this verse. So Srila Prabhupada starts this purport explaining how this lotus flower, this, we cannot imagine how big this lotus flower is, this gigantic, enormous lotus flower, is the universal Virat form of the gigantic form of the Lord in the material world. So this is, in other words, the universal form, isn't it? So we have heard this about this universal form in the Bhagavad Gita and many other places. And the universal form has many purposes, and one of them is to help people who usually don't have faith in God to connect with God, at least on the material level. And we see that's already happening, isn't it? I mean, people that, not everybody might be religious, but mostly spiritual people like nature, don't they? And they like to go hiking and go to mountains and watch sunsets. They are worshiping the universal form. Little do they know that the grand beauty and everything is all part of Krishna. Every part of creation is part and parcel of Krishna. And that's why the universal form has, the Bhagavatam describes how the clouds are the hairs of the universal form, and the mountains are the bones in the spine. The trees are the hairs on the body, and different things. But it also says, Prabhupada also says in one purport around this third canto, that the universal form is also a challenge to the non-believers, because it puts them to question, like, oh, so everything is part of the Lord? Yeah, you don't have to find him in one place. He is everything. So that's also a challenge for them. However, the universal form is not a primary factor for those who are worshipping Bhagavan or the Lord in his personal most developed stage. So there are many stages of God realization. Brahman, just the energy, the impersonal aspect. There is Paramatma, the localized super soul within each and every living being. And there is Swayam Bhagavan Krishna, who is always in Vrindavan, not easily approached, only through bhakti. So we are Vaishnavas worshipping Bhagavan. So the universal form is good when we are out and about, and we don't have a reference. However, I found this interesting. Prabhupada said the universal form gives little benefit if the attitude of service is not awakened in the observer. So if you look at the universal form, the parts of creation, nature, etc., or everything really, but you don't remember that since everything is part and parcel of the Lord, it's meant for his service. And you think, oh, I'm not going to exploit this thing. I'm not going to destroy it. How can I serve this person, this space, nature? Then the service attitude completes the benefit. You get the full benefit of the universal form. If apart from seeing that everything is part and parcel of the Lord, you can also engage it in the Lord's service. And you think, how can I be of service? Because here, if one fails to see everything as part of Krishna, and one remains with the enjoyer mentality of Purusha, I am the enjoyer, then we're going to be misled. This material creation, instead of inspiring us, it will delude us. It will make us, oh, come enjoy me. You're going to start seeing other things and not Krishna. So this illusory energy in the universal form is also represented as the smiling of the Lord, isn't it? They say the universal form, religion is the Lord's chest, irreligion is his back, and many other things, right? The Brahmanas are the head, and his teeth is his affection, and his smile is the illusory energy itself. Wow. The smile is the most enchanting aspect of a person, isn't it? So, yes, the invisible illusory energy is present. It's interesting because when you think of the Bhagavan, Krishna's personal smiling, that's not illusory, right? That's very nice. That's transcendental. We want that smile of the Lord. But the smile of the universal form is not exactly the same. So, you know, there are different levels of seeing the Lord. And yes, so these analogies are just meant to help us see Krishna. And one more fascinating thing I found, which I looked through and I was like, wait, did I read that right? And I went and read it again. And I don't know if you've seen this, but I thought it was really nice. In the second canto, second chapter, verse 1, in the purport, as again about the universal form, Prabhupada says how the Lord has hands, legs, and eyes in every nook and corner of the universe. And we hear that a lot, especially in Ishapanishad. He has hands and eyes and legs everywhere. You just think how it's hard to imagine, isn't it? But the idea is that he's everywhere and he can do anything, right? Hands and legs means he's fully capable. He's never out of reach. Nobody's out of reach of the Lord. But then the very practical thing that Prabhupada says right after, which I totally missed, but then I reread, he said, this means, so the Lord having hands, legs, and eyes in every nook and corner of this creation, this means that the expansions of differentiated parts and parcels called jivas or living entities, they are the assisting hands of the Lord. You seeing what I'm seeing? So, you know, if you put yourself up for service, if you make yourself available, like Krishna, I'm your servant, and you just live with this mindset, you'll be engaged. Krishna will use you for something. Because you are, that's actually the nature of the soul, is to be a part of the Lord. So it says, so Prabhupada was saying the purport that, so that's what happens. The Lord has a plan and everybody has a role, a purpose, something to play in the greater scheme of things. So if you allow yourself to be engaged, you will. And you're going to feel so complete and so happy. You're not going to feel like a piece out of place. But sometimes it's hard to trust, no? Sometimes we think, I want to serve the Lord in this way, which is very good also. But there is a balance in it, right? It's like, how does the Lord want me to serve? And how do I want to serve? And sometimes we are too attached to how we want to serve. And we might not looking at the, how do you call it, the signs of how the Lord, you know, wants us to serve. And that way it will be the most fulfilling way. It's not like, oh, I would like to serve this way, but the Lord wants me to serve that way, I'll serve that way. No, you're not going to be upset. You're going to be fully satisfied. So it's a question of surrender because it's a leap of faith, right? It's the unknown. But it's not so unknown if we develop trust in Krishna. If we develop affection for Krishna, we can trust him. Just like a child trusts his parents. The child doesn't know where the parents are going, but the parents said, I'm taking you to Disneyland, let's say. The child would be like, sure. They get into a car, they get into a plane. The child has no way to check that they are going there. But the child trusts that the parents have their best interest in mind and they mean what they said, isn't it? So that trust in Krishna we need to develop. And I've heard from my spiritual master telling it to some another disciple, how do we trust Krishna then? How do I increase my trust? And he said, you need to know Krishna to trust him. And many times we listen so many things and we forget to understand that the focus point is actually developing a relationship with Krishna. So we hear about his pastimes and his interaction with others. And that increases our faith in the Lord, someone that doesn't break his promise. Someone who is always there for his devotees. Someone that will break his own promise to protect a devotee. Like the epic, beautiful painting of Krishna holding the cartwheel from, you know, in the war of Kurukshetra. He's holding this great wheel. Do you know what this painting is about? Yeah? So, for those, just to recap here. So, Krishna made a vow not to fight in the battle of Kurukshetra. He said, "You have either have me or my army." He asked between Duryodhana and Arjuna. "You can either have me, but I won't fight, or you can have all my Yadu dynasty army. Which one do you want?" Duryodhana, I mean, there was a whole pastime of how it happened. But in the end, Arjuna got Krishna, who wouldn't fight. And Bhishma knew that. So Bhishma started like laser focusing on Arjuna. And he started throwing arrows after arrows. And Bhishma is like half demigod, very powerful. He's no ordinary warrior. He's probably the most powerful warrior of the whole battle of Kurukshetra. So he was really targeting Arjuna. Arjuna was getting more, you know, he was getting defeated. When Krishna saw that, he couldn't hold it himself. He stepped on the way and he said he would not pick up a weapon. So he didn't pick up a weapon, but he picked up a broken chariot. And he was about, you know, to be like, leave my devotee alone. That was the energy. But Bhishma is another devotee as well, right? So Krishna wouldn't hurt him. So he, with all the energy, he threw that wheel very, very far from Kurukshetra. And where did it land? It landed in West Bengal, in Ekachakra. Yes. That's the city where Lord Nityananda was born. It's called Ekachakra. Or Virachandrapur, named after Lord Nityananda's son. But originally it's named Ekachakra because of this wheel from Kurukshetra that Krishna... So, you know, it's a historical fact. I mean, it's, we know it's history, but even today, you know, we can see it's history, that the place where the wheel landed. So Krishna, he will do anything for his devotees. So when we have this unflinching faith in Krishna's character and Krishna's love for us, we will trust his plan. And yes, so when things don't go our way, just always remember Krishna must have a better plan. There's always a better plan. There's no other option. Our mind likes to think it could be in many other ways, but if we trust there's a supreme controller who is always our well-wisher, you're the supreme enjoyer, we're going to have peace, right? And that's the last verse of Bhagavad Gita, 5th chapter, verse 29. The last verse is Prabhupada calls the peace formula. Bhuktaram yagyatapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram suhridam sarvabhutanam gyatamam shantim richati. So, shantim richati. That person is peaceful who knows those three things. That Krishna is bhuktaram, he's a supreme enjoyer of all austerities and sacrifices, yagyatapasam. He's sarvaloka maheshwaram, there is nothing outside of his control. Of sarvaloka, all planetary systems. We have Radhalondonishwara in London, right? Krishna controller of London. And what to speak about London and the whole universe. And Suhridam Sarvabhutanam. Suhridam is a Sanskrit word which means well-wisher. There are many levels of friendship and many words for friendship in Sanskrit. And Suhridam is the highest. That means a selfless well-wisher. Krishna is Suhridam. He's very close to the heart. Sarvabhutanam, of all living entities. So when you know this, Gyatvamam Shantim Richati, you'll be very peaceful. So these are some notes on the universal form. Now Hiranyagarbha, which is this other point here. So because Prabhupada ends this verse, which is the purport to this verse, which is, now I found out, the collection of verses, although I read through them to prepare, so I'm happy I did that. So from this description, we have the conception of three, the gross Virat form, the subtle Hiranyagarbha. So we spoke about the gross Virat form, the universal form, which is manifested as everything, and then amalgamated within the Lord after dissolution. I believe it's also called pradhan, which is when all the elements of creation are in an unmanifest, dormant state. And then we have the sato hiranyagarbha. So the sato hiranyagarbha is like the creative energy. And there's many more meanings, which you're going to get to it. And the material creative force, Brahma. So Brahma is like the person, the personal agent of all creation. Jai. Shri Radha Gokulananda ki. Saram Lakshman Hanuman Ki, Gorni Tai Ki. So in different places of the Bhagavatam, Hiranyagarbha, and I'm quoting from Prabhupada's purports, Hiranyagarbha is described in three different, it can mean three different things. Hiranyagarbha often refers to Brahma, Lord Brahma. But it also means Garbhadakshay Vishnu. He's also known as Hiranyagarbha. And all the sum total of the material energy is also called Hiranyagarbha. So in different situations, Hiranyagarbha means different things. And I was like, but what's Hiranyagarbha at last? Because if you think the word Hiranya means golden, brilliant, like the name Hiranyakashipu. We know that name, isn't it? Hiranyakashipu means gold and soft beds. Kashipu and Hiranya. Lust and greed. Yeah? But Hiranya generally just means golden or brilliant. And then Hiranyagarbha, Garbha means womb. And you look at the name, Garbhodakshay Vishnu, another Garbha there. So this is the womb, or like where everything happens, isn't it? Everything generates from. That's why the word impregnation is used many times. The entities were, living entities were impregnated in the universal egg, etc. So because, so the interesting thing, all the souls, so what's happening here is that the souls, in this situation, their material bodies are gone, because the solution, so the water basically devastated the whole material universe, but the living entities are still in that universe. You know, when Karnadakshay Vishnu, he just breathes in, everything is just inside his body. There's absolutely nothing, right? And he expires, and there are millions of universes from his pores, right? So within every universe, there is Garbhodakshay Vishnu. And the living entities are spread in it. So each universe has its own timeline as well. So let's forget about the breathing of Mahavishnu, because that's too grand for now. But the small universe has its own timeline. And there's many semi and full dissolutions. And in this case, from what I read and reread, the living entities, they are still in that universe after devastation, but not in their gross forms. You know how we reincarnate, we have a different body each time? This time, nobody reincarnated. They're all on this cloud of subtle form, which means mind, intelligence, and false ego. These three create our subtle body. So they are with their subtle body. They still have their desires, their karmas, but there's nowhere to manifest in the universe. So all these living entities, now they become they get infused into this lotus, which has Kala inside. Kala is time. But Kala also means the creative energy. Oh yeah, so all the living entities of all three worlds remained in their subtle bodies by dint of the energy called Kala. Yes. So the interesting thing which I saw in the verse 14 is that the sum total form of the fruitive activity of the living entities took the shape of the bud of a lotus. Right, and the living entities were also in there. And even before that, oh yeah, here, yeah. Generated from the personality of Vishnu by his supreme will. So the Lord just decided that that subtle form is going to look like a lotus. You know, that's his creative capacity and desire. And it illuminated everything by his desire. And I've seen in one purport by Prabhupada that the living entities, because we are part and parcels of Krishna, we all have this brilliance, natural brilliance. Like Krishna has the fulgence of the Brahma Jyoti, we all have our individual shyness. Just imagine all the living entities together, and then they're all shining. So this lotus is shining with all the living entities in it, just like the sun. And it created so much light and apparently heat. And it dried up the vast waters of devastation. And now the lotus is ready. Now the universe is getting ready for a new beginning. And before the very beginning, we need the engineer, or Lord Brahma. So the first living entity to come out of the lotus is always Brahma. And did you know that sometimes Because the Brahma living entity has to be very qualified to do that job. And some universes, they don't have a qualified enough living entity. So Lord Krishna himself has to become Brahma. So that's interesting, isn't it? But that's not the case in our universe, in this time. So Brahma comes, and Brahma is very, very confused. And that's what we're going to see in the next verses. How did Lord Brahma, when he appeared, there was only darkness and this lotus and a mission before him, but no instructions, no manual. So Brahma was very confused. And he was looking everywhere. He looked everywhere for solutions, for signs. And because he looked in all directions, he developed foreheads. This is the next verse to say that. That's how he got the foreheads, because of looking in the four directions for answers, for a sign of what to do. He looked at the lotus and he thought, the lotus must be sprouting from somewhere, from water. So I'll go down and find out where was the source. Because you see, Brahma, he's pure intelligence. His body is made of intelligence. He is the main guna avatar of the mode of passion. And he has so much intelligence. So imagine he's the most intelligent living being. And he can't figure out his source. So Prabhupada compares this to the next verses. And he says, you know, how if Lord Brahma is the most intelligent living being, he's asking the right questions. Where did I come from? Where am I going? And what's the source? What's the purpose of creation? And Prabhupada said, every intelligent man has to ask those questions, like Lord Brahma did. And Brahma went down to the stem of the lotus. He got very close to the navel of Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, but he couldn't still understand the Lord. And Prabhupada says that through personal endeavor, we can go close to the Lord, but we can't reach him. We can only reach him by his mercy. So there is a mix of endeavor and mercy, which Brahma is displaying for us in his further behavior. So Brahma goes back into the lotus, and he starts to meditate. And he meditates for 100 years of his life, which is a lot, much more than we can our 100 years. It's like 100 of our years, like if you meditated your whole life. That's how Brahma did. And then Krishna was pleased and appeared to him. So one last point I wanted to make is this, because I was also thinking paradoxically, wait, so Brahma did the wrong thing by endeavoring. Not the wrong thing, but it's not enough to just endeavor on your own. So he couldn't find the Lord. But then he meditated for 100 years. Isn't that also endeavoring? Because we have to be very careful with this, because sometimes we can misinterpret and think, oh, I shouldn't endeavor at all, right? I should just wait for mercy. But that's the wrong route as well. That's the mode of ignorance if you don't do any endeavor. So what kind of endeavor are we trying to do? So Prabhupada says the endeavor of Brahma was different when he meditated than when he went around looking for Krishna. The difference is that there was self-surrender. The other one, he's thinking, I am going to find by my own capacity what's going on here. That was very, I'm going to do it. When he sat down to meditate, he concentrated himself on the source of everything. And just trying to concentrate on the Supreme, that's a service in its own. And he wasn't doing that before. He was looking for solutions. But then when he started thinking about the Lord, he was performing devotional service. And that counted. And that endeavor is different. Because that is an endeavor to please Krishna. And that's how you're going to get the benefit of Krishna's mercy in return. So we should endeavor, but the endeavor should be with the motivation to please the Lord and receive his mercy. Not with the endeavor to achieve something on our own effort, by our own merit, just for our own sake. That's the difference. It's very subtle, right? Krishna consciousness and the motivation behind. So Lord Brahma's motivation was that. And Prabhupada said something also interesting, because Brahma didn't know what he was meditating upon isn't it? He didn't understand his source. He hadn't met Krishna yet. So I also asked Hila, how is this devotional service if he doesn't even know who Krishna is? But Prabhupada's so genius, right? So Prabhupada explained, he said, even if one doesn't know exactly who the supreme source of everything is, if he's personal or impersonal, just if one tries to meditate on the source of everything, that is counted as devotional service. And I thought, how amazing. Because there are so many people out there who don't know exactly, so to say, who Krishna is. But if they endeavor to understand the source of everything, it's devotional service. And they're going to get the benefit from that. I thought that was really nice. And then Prabhupada said, when he meditated, there was self-surrender. And when there is self-surrender, there is sure to be devotional service. So that's also really sweet, because that's something we can apply in our own lives, isn't it? When we do service, we can do any kind of service, and we have to stop and ask ourselves, am I surrendering here at this point? Am I doing it for Krishna? What's my purpose? So we can always ask ourselves, and this is going to drastically change our Krishna consciousness. And at last, point about Brahma's meditation is that he was very patient, wasn't he? 100 years meditating. He didn't like, this is not working, there's nothing out there. He just waited and meditated and endeavored. He had the perfect combination for devotional service, which we hear in the Nectar of Instruction. Verse 3. Utsahan nishchaya dharyat tat tat karma pravartanat Sangatyagat sato vritir shadbir bhaktir prasidati. Which is the 6 principles which bring devotional service to complete success. And the first one is utsahan, or enthusiasm. So he was enthusiastic. Nishchayad, determined. But also dhairyat, patient. So we need to be patient, and there are other points. But these are the main three, or the first three. Enthusiasm, perseverance, and patience. And Prabhupada said that one needs to wait for Krishna's mercy. And that's an important aspect of devotional service, where we understand that we're not in control of the results of our practice, but it's really up to Krishna to reveal to us when, how much, in which way. It's in Krishna's hands. So these are some last reflections. Is there any comments or questions from anyone today? Thank you so much for your attention. Yes, Rabbi. Said Bhagavad Gita, Prabhu?
Yeah. Okay. This is Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4. And the series of verses, it starts with 31 and then goes to 35. Mm. It says, O best of the Kuru dynasty, without sacrifice, one can never live happily. And on this planet, or in this life, what to speak of the next? All these different types of sacrifice are approved by the Vedas, all of them are born of different types of work. Knowing them as such, you will become liberated, O chastiser of the enemy. The sacrifice that performed in knowledge is better than the mere sacrifice of material possessions. After all, O son of Pritha, all the sacrifices of work culminate in transcendental knowledge. So just try to learn the truth from this spiritual master. Inquire from him submissively and render service unto him for the self-realized souls. They can implant knowledge to you and because they have seen the truth. And the truth, they're supposed to be a representative of Krishna, that Krishna speaks through them. And then it says, having obtained real knowledge from a self-realized soul, you'll never fall again into illusion, for by this knowledge you will see that all living beings are but part of the Supreme, or in other words, they are mine. Mm. And that mine is a reciprocation. We're supposed to love Krishna and he loves us. It's just a reciprocation.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Ru. Yeah, everybody always quotes like Tadvidhi Pranipatena, you know, we should approach a surrendered soul and learn from him. But then the next verse is really nice, which he said, it's like, and then what's going to happen when you do that? You're going to see that all living entities are part and parcel of me and they're mine. So sweet, isn't it? Yeah. Because that's what we're going to get from serving a self-realized soul. Yeah.
Thank you. Nicely researched classes. Interesting. You mentioned how Prabhupada said that if someone's looking for the source, maybe doesn't know the source, it's counted as devotional service. I was wondering, when Brahma performed his austerities, could we say that because the Lord, out of his mercy, he said, he gave the sound ta-pa. So in a sense that Lord Brahma's kind of, he's following the command of Krishna. Krishna's not revealing himself, but he's given Lord Brahma this kind of instruction, or this two syllables tapa, and so he's, in a way, he's already connected to Krishna unknowingly. Would that be a good way to look at it?
If he is already connected to Krishna because he listened to his instruction.
Yeah, he's already heard the sound vibration, and he's interpreted that and followed his understanding of what that means for him to do, to perform austerity. Yeah.
Krishna is in his heart already, so they are connected no matter what. But Brahma just doesn't know that, like us, you know. Because Prabhupada's interesting, because Prabhupada sometimes put Brahma's in a pedestal and sometimes not. Like even Brahma is forgetful to speak about us. But Brahma follow Krishna, do like Brahma. So there's many things to learn from Brahma's behavior. But like you said, yes, he's following Krishna's instruction. Yeah, thank you.
thanks for a very helpful class. My query is, you mentioned that we need to wait for Krishna's mercy sometime, but at the same time, it's been mentioned by Srila Prabhupada that Krishna's mercy is always there.
Yeah.
So how to understand that? I mean, so Krishna's mercy is always there.
Yes.
We need to wait for Krishna's mercy.
Yes, good question. So, so Prabhupada wrote here, the exact sentence I was quoting, Prabhupada said, one is to wait for Krishna's mercy in order to engage in his devotional service. So if you don't have, for example, someone is not connected to devotional service, when Krishna gives him mercy, he'll become connected to devotional service and start doing devotional service. Prabhupada said the other situation where we are waiting for Krishna's mercy is to get to know Krishna. So Krishna's mercy is always there, but in this connection of waiting, Prabhupada said waiting to get service and waiting to get to know Krishna, those two ways. Because we are already serving, but we want to get to know Krishna, so that we need to wait for that. And sometimes you're waiting for service. You also need to wait for Krishna to allow that to manifest in our life, devotional service. Yeah. Thank you so much. Thank you, everybody. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Shri Prabhupada ki, Nitai Gaura Premanande.